From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Last fall, 15 companies won preliminary licenses to grow medical marijuana in Maryland, but the new industry has since been mired in legal challenges. Aaron Cox of the Baltimore Sun gets us up to speed. Then, a large-scale study of a compound in cannabis finds it can reduce seizures that don't respond to typical treatments. We speak to Dr. Oren Devinsky, director of the Comprehensive Epilepsy Center at New York University Langone Medical Center. And Gail Rand, a mother, tells us how her son's epilepsy prompted her to become an advocate for medical cannabis.
I think it's a great opportunity for my son Logan and for many other people to try based on the lack of side effects and what we've heard from other states about how well it works.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. We're talking today about medical marijuana in Maryland. The Maryland Medical Cannabis Commission granted 15 companies preliminary licenses to grow the drug last fall. Since then, the process has been mired in legal controversy over the lack of racial diversity among the firms selected for those licenses. For patients awaiting access to medical cannabis, the timeline is uncertain. Joining us by phone is Baltimore Sun State House Bureau Chief and politics reporter Aaron Cox. Welcome to the show, Aaron.
Oh, so happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
You've been following this issue. A company mostly owned by African Americans that did not receive a preliminary license brought suit. Tell us about the case.
When lawmakers set up this program, they specifically told the commission to take a couple things into account when deciding who got the licenses. The commission was instructed to actively seek racial and geographic diversity among the owners of these firms. And for long, complicated reasons, the commission chose not to even ask about race, not to ask about ethnic identity of the owners when they were picking these licenses. And as a result, none of the 15 companies given preliminary approval to grow the drug are owned by African Americans. So one of the companies that failed to become a finalist sued the state, saying that the commission broke the law by not taking into account racial diversity. And that lawsuit, along with another, has kind of spawned this big wave of legal challenges to the validity of the licenses that were issued.
If the law specified that the commission was supposed to look at the racial identity or the racial diversity among firms that got licenses, why did that not happen?
It's not legal to just say we're going to give five licenses to African Americans and five licenses to Caucasians. That's not a constitutional way to go about conducting government business, that you're required to have some sort of study or proof that there is a wrong that's being righted by giving a racial preference to the applicants, that there has to be some track record of disenfranchisement. And so what happened in this case is that a state lawmaker asked the attorney general this very specific question: is it legal to just give licenses based on racial diversity? To which the Attorney General's office wrote a letter of advice saying, well, no, you'd have to conduct some sort of diversity study first. And the commission interpreted that letter to mean, well, that we can't really study an industry that doesn't exist, right? Medical marijuana industry doesn't exist in Maryland. We can't study diversity within it, so therefore we can't consider race, and so we're not going to.
The governor has now ordered an expedited racial diversity study, correct?
Right. The proponents of racially conscious contract awards point out that there's a lot of other ways to get at this question of whether or not minorities face disadvantages in competing for these licenses. You can look at whether or not they face disadvantages in the agricultural industry, in access to venture capital, in the pharmaceutical industry and other existing industries that feed into this. So what the governor has done is ordered an expedited study to look at whether or not minority-owned firms do face institutional bias and disadvantages in getting into the medical marijuana industry. And that's kind of a necessary legal step for the commission to actually follow the law as written.
So is the idea that this study that the governor has ordered would play into some action by the General Assembly? They looked at the issue in the last session, but didn't succeed in doing anything.
So there was general agreement that it was not acceptable that no minority-owned firms were among the winners. The problem came with, how do you actually fix that? Do you take away licenses from some people who won? Do you issue new licenses? There's a couple of other controversies with how the licenses were awarded. Do you fix those too? And so lawmakers kind of got caught up in trying to decide which problems they were going to fix and how they were going to fix it, and ran out of time before they reached a conclusion. So this diversity study was one of the things that everybody agreed needed to be done, and lawmakers had attempted to pass the law calling for it, but that law also did lots of other things that people did not agree on, so ultimately didn't pass. So this diversity study, once it's completed, would just simply say whether or not it would be constitutionally fair to give out medical marijuana growing licenses in a way that gave preferential treatment to companies owned by minorities. What would have to happen next is lawmakers would have to authorize more licenses, because right now there's a cap of 15.
Is there likely to be a special session of the legislature to deal with this?
Well, that's one of the big questions around Annapolis. There's a lot of enthusiasm from some corners about it, and there's a lack of enthusiasm from others. The governor has said that Senate President Mike Miller, who wants a special session, and House Speaker Mike Bush, who has been reluctant to call it, that they have to agree before he will call one.
Why is this question of the participation of African Americans in this new industry so sensitive in the legislature?
There's a couple of reasons for that. African Americans have been disproportionately harmed by enforcement of drug laws and enforcement of medical marijuana laws. So if you talk to members of the Legislative Black Caucus, they'll say quite plainly that there are a lot of black people in jail for smoking this stuff. And now we have, when it becomes a multi-million, even perhaps even a billion-dollar industry, all of the money that's going to be made off of that goes to white men. And that's fundamentally unfair. The chair of the Legislative Black Caucus, Cheryl Glenn, a Democrat from Baltimore, has called it a civil rights issue.
So is there any way to forecast a timetable?
Well, there is one company that's already received a license to grow the drug, and there is a second poised to get a final inspection. Those companies would be able, if nothing happens, they'd be able to get the drug grown and available to patients by the end of the summer. As far as the legislature coming back to pass a law to reopen the process, that timeline has been complicated a little bit by the Speaker of the House undergoing a liver transplant. So I don't think any decisions will be made until the future of his health is a little more clear. And even if they did convene by the end of the summer, the law would not take effect until next year, and you wouldn't get new licenses awarded for probably several months or even a full year after that.
I really appreciate your telling us all these twists and turns. Thank you, Erin.
My pleasure. Thanks for listening.
Erin Cox is the Baltimore Sun State House Bureau Chief. She covers politics and has been following Maryland's medical cannabis industry. Quick break now on WIPR. This is On the Record. When we come back, for children suffering from unrelenting seizures, medical cannabis appears promising. We hear from a physician and a mother turned advocate. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. While the medical cannabis industry in Maryland is entangled in legal snags, thousands of patients already have registered with the state to be able to receive a recommendation from a doctor, similar to a prescription, to buy the drug when it is available. One of the medical conditions for which the law says cannabis could be recommended is seizures. In a few minutes, we'll hear from a mother and advocate who works with a firm with a license to grow cannabis. Her son suffers from seizures. First, we're joined by Dr. Oren Devinsky, professor of neurology, neurosurgery, and psychiatry at New York University Langone Medical Center and director of the Comprehensive Epilepsy Center there. In May, the New England Journal of Medicine published his findings on the non-psychoactive component of marijuana and its use in treating a seizure disorder in children and young adults. Thanks so much for your time.
My pleasure. Happy to join.
So this study looked at patients with Dravet syndrome. What is Dravet syndrome?
Dravet syndrome is a severe epilepsy, usually beginning in the first year of life. Most commonly, about 80-90% of these children have a mutation in a important sodium channel gene expressed widely in the brain cells.
It's severe. Is there a high mortality?
There is. Sadly, approximately 20% of these children will die by age 20 from either a single seizure, a prolonged seizure, drowning, or accident. So it's a terrible disorder, and even the 80% who survive often have significant intellectual disability, walking impairment, and to control their seizures to some degree, they're often on very high doses of seizure medications that cause terrible side effects.
So these seizures are not treated well with drugs. What alternatives do patients and families have?
They're really limited options for these families. Many of them will do a high-fat protein diet, very low-carbohydrate diet called the ketogenic or modified Atkins diet. And that has some benefit for some of these children, but it's really limited. And the vast majority have severe epilepsy that is often frequent and can be intense and really disrupt their lives and their families' lives.
It's not something that can be addressed with surgery?
Correct. It cannot. Unfortunately, because it's a gene disorder that's expressed widely throughout the brain, it's really one of those things, removing one area is just not going to help.
So you, in this study, looked at 120 children and teenagers with Dravet syndrome who didn't know if they were getting a drug or a placebo. What did you find in your study?
What we found was that in the group, about 60 children who did get the active drug, the cannabidiol, that there was a reduction in seizures, a median reduction of the seizures that we could easily expect the parents to count, the more intense ones, of 39%. And in the placebo group, it was 13%. And that difference was statistically significant and strongly supported that this is an effective drug for the disorder, although not a miracle cure. It's not that they all became seizure-free. Only 5% were seizure-free during the 14 weeks of study period.
5% seizure-free, but a significantly bigger percentage who had reduction in seizures.
Exactly. And these are the kind of results we've seen in the past with other drugs that have been approved by the FDA. I think this establishes that cannabidiol is an effective drug for this epilepsy syndrome. And there have subsequently been two additional studies in a similar, very severe childhood epilepsy syndrome called Lennox-Gastaut syndrome. That study included both children and young adults. And that found very, very similar findings that were statistically significant in a randomized placebo-controlled trial.
That's Dr. Oren Devinsky, professor of neurology, neurosurgery, and psychiatry at New York University Langone Medical Center here on The Record on WYPR. We're talking about his research into an element of cannabis and its effect on seizures in young people. How does this compound, cannabidiol, work?
That's a superb question, which science can't fully explain in 2017. What we believe is that it probably has multiple mechanisms of action. Perhaps the most important is on a single receptor or protein that lies on the outer membrane of nerve cells, and by attaching to that receptor, it better balances calcium activity within nerve cells, and in doing that helps control seizures. That's our best theory right now.
What kind of side effects did participants taking cannabis?
Side effects did occur, and I think it's a really important point that for many parents and patients, the idea that this is natural means it's safe and effective, and the fact that it's natural by no means tells us it's safe or effective. So it's a drug, there are side effects. Having said that, they were overall, the side effect profile was very modest, and most people tolerated it well. The major ones that occurred were tiredness and stomach problems, either diarrhea, decreased appetite, or weight loss.
And are those common side effects of anti-seizure medications?
Tiredness is extremely common with seizure medications. The stomach discomfort and diarrhea occur with several other seizure medications, but many other seizure medications have really troublesome side effects like impairing cognitive function, short-term memory, ability to retrieve words, mental processing speed, and we didn't see any of those kind of side effects with cannabidiol.
As I mentioned, this was 120 children and adolescents with Dravet syndrome between the ages of 2 and 18, the first really large-scale study. Considering that marijuana is considered a Schedule I substance by the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration, a category of drugs labeled as having no currently accepted medical use, was it difficult to get approval for this study?
It was. It took a very long time to go through the DEA process, together with the FDA and the Institutional Review Board. But the scheduling one for cannabidiol, I don't know how to nicely put this, but insane would probably be the most polite word I could use. Cannabidiol is not psychoactive. Cannabidiol has been shown to be effective in combination with THC in several randomized trials in Europe.
THC being the part of...
The psychoactive component, correct. So it has been shown to be effective in treating spasms and MS with THC. So we know it does have some medical benefits. That's been established. We know it's a safe drug in that there's absolutely no tendency towards habit forming or drug-seeking behavior or a high or psychoactive property in any study that's been done. So to say that this drug, CBD, is more dangerous than, let's say, opiates, which kill 30,000 Americans a year, would be along the lines of saying it would be safer for your child to play with a shotgun that's loaded than with a water pistol.
Strong words. What is the next step to build on the research you've done?
So the next step will be there are two more papers that are in the process of being written up and or published on those other disorder, Lennox-Gastaut. There's another large study on Dravet syndrome, which is finishing up, and the blind will be broken shortly, and then that will be released and published. And I, at this point, the company that sponsored the trial, GW Greenwich Biosciences, is in the process of requesting approval process through the Food and Drug Administration. And other companies are testing CBD in other populations, like adults with focal epilepsy, which is a much bigger population of people with epilepsy in the United States, probably over a million people. And so I think this is moving forward. I think the biggest need we have as a country is that we now have many, many states who have approved medical marijuana programs, New York, New Jersey, where I practice, and all over, California and Colorado leading the way. And all of those states have THC, which is a psychoactive component, together with CBD and other cannabinoid compounds in the materials that are available for patients. And we know nothing about the safety or effectiveness of compounds like THC in treating epilepsy in humans. There's a lot of strong opinion, and I think that's fine, but I think, as the saying goes, I believe in God, everyone else show me the data. So I think we need to see the data. And we have hundreds, thousands of children being treated with THC for epilepsy. We need to see the data. Is it safe and is it effective? If it is safe and effective, then it really should be available to all children through prescription plans, and parents shouldn't have to pay $250 a month to get access to it. By the same token, if it's not effective or it has really bad side effects, then we need to know that, and no children should be treated with it or find the right group that would benefit from it. So we need more research here.
I really appreciate your explaining your research to us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Oren Devinsky is a professor of neurology, neurosurgery, and psychiatry, and director of the Comprehensive Epilepsy Center at New York University Langone Medical Center. This is On the Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. Now we turn to Gail Rand. She's mother, advocate, and chief financial officer of Forward Grow, the first firm awarded a license to grow medical cannabis in Maryland. Welcome to On the Record.
Thank you so much for having me.
So nice to have you here. Gail Rand, why did you become an advocate for medical cannabis?
So I have a 7-year-old son who suffers from epilepsy, as well as autism, ADHD, and celiac disease. And in 2012, I heard of a friend in Colorado that was having amazing success for her son, who suffers from the same type of epilepsy that my son Logan has, called DOSA syndrome. And her son went seizure-free after trying lots of pharmaceuticals on medical cannabis. And I thought that my son had a right to try it here in Maryland.
But, of course, until the medical cannabis regime is operational, he doesn't have that legal right. So you've been advocating for that.
Yes, for many years. And I'm really excited that hopefully by this fall he should have the opportunity to try legal medical cannabis here in Maryland.
I assume you've tried other treatments.
He's tried 6 different pharmaceuticals. He's tried a really strict high-fat diet called the ketogenic diet, and he's tried steroids. And a lot of them had pretty significant side effects. One of the pharmaceuticals he was on was benzodiazepine, and the side effect of weaning the benzodiazepine that didn't work is seizures. So we ended up taking 2 years to, and he was about 4 at the time, took 2 years to wean him of this medicine.
How intense are his seizures?
So he would have this type of seizure called a drop seizure, and it's kind of like a marionette whose strings have been cut. So he would fall to the ground pretty intensely and hit whatever he would hit at the time. So we would hold his head when he was eating his cereal. The top of the stairs gives me heart attacks. He would have some pretty significant falls. We spent a lot of time in the emergency room.
Oh, my gosh. And how often?
He'd have seizures every day. We were actually one of the luckier ones in that he did not have the type of seizures that would make him stop breathing. So it was more just the damage from the fall itself as well as the damage that is happening to his brain.
What have you heard from families who are waiting for medical cannabis to become available for their children?
So some of the families, unfortunately, have had to leave the state. They didn't want to wait for the program. But there's a bunch of families that are really optimistic that this medicine could help their kids. There's a lot of people that have become very passionate advocating to try to get this program rolling. So we're super excited. There's the opportunity coming up in just a couple months. And it's not just parents of epilepsy kids. It's parents whose kids are suffering from cancer or from pain management or autism, even ADHD and anxiety. Autism's an interesting one to me because there's a high comorbidity between kids that have epilepsy and autism, which means that I've heard upwards of 70 to 80% of kids with epilepsy also suffer from autism. And there's been a lot of anecdotal evidence from other states that have shown that the medicine, medical cannabis, can help with some of the symptoms of autism. It's a pretty pervasive issue.
So as you look ahead and things seem to be one step forward, one step back, getting a medical cannabis regime going in Maryland, what are you hoping will be the effect for Logan? We talked about the effect on seizures, but yep. Do you think it may also help his autism?
I'm hoping that it might. We don't know that for sure because there's a lack of clinical trials here in America, but I've heard so many stories about how it could help with some aggression, self-aggression, some of the anxiety that is a symptom also of autism. So autism is not an explicit condition here in Maryland, but if there's a medical provider who wants to recommend it because they feel like there isn't currently a treatment that has worked and they think there's a possibility that medical cannabis could help, then it's possible to recommend for that.
Under the regime that is set up in Maryland law, how would a child like your son, who's 7, be able to access medical marijuana?
So children who are under 18 would have to have a registered caregiver. That caregiver would have to be a legal guardian. So in this case, my husband and I could be the legal guardians for my son. And he would have to have a medical provider who would be willing to recommend the medicine for him. And I think another important thing to address is that he wouldn't be smoking the medicine. He would be able to access lots of different routes of administration based on what he needs. It's possible that he might have what I've heard has worked a lot in other states, which is a tincture of an oil form. So you would draw out a very specific dose based on the independently lab-tested medicine that was provided at the dispensary and administered like we do his other oral medicines.
Do you have any concerns about your son being exposed to those extracts of marijuana?
I'm not at all concerned. In Maryland here, we have a highly regulated program, so I will know what I'm giving him. There's a third-party independent testing lab that will have a lab report about what exactly is in the medicine that I'm giving him. There have been shown to be very, very few, if not sometimes no, side effects related to medical cannabis, and the side effects from the pharmaceuticals he was on were extreme. And there's never in the history of time ever been anybody who's died from medical cannabis. So I think it's a great opportunity for my son, Logan, and for many other people to try based on the lack of side effects and what we've heard from other states about how well it works for different conditions.
I really appreciate your talking to us about it. Good luck.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. It's been very great talking to you.
Gail Rand, she is a mother of a son who has seizures. She's an advocate, and she's chief financial officer of Forward Grow, the first firm awarded a license to grow medical cannabis in Maryland. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.